go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running for this, the 22nd day of September 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live, and that is where you go if you would like to participate in the live multimedia real-time wacky zany extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Yes, indeed. Yeah, just go there. Go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click chat room. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password. Jump right in where Anatole and Jug of Punch and Kid Mark and VT Blom will all happily greet you. And more will follow later, I do presume. Yes, this is a listener-supported broadcast operation. And we find ourselves hoping this evening to keep even with the week by raising all of $200. $200, 200, 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 and a quarter, and of course 64 at $3.13. And we'll round the half penny up from 12.5 cents. We'll round that half penny up and apply it to Agnes's Manny and Petty Fund. Yes. She would probably give me a scathing glance if she were to hear me actually say that, because, of course, she's not that. Go figure. I married this incredibly practical woman who doesn't do Manny's and Petty's. I don't know. Right. But anyway. Okay, well, maybe I can talk her into some redheaded extensions or something. But that's what we'll do with the half pennies. Okay, it's very easy to help keep The Horn on the air. Just go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on Contribute, and there you will find a little very simple PayPal interface. If you'd like to set it and forget it and become a monthly subscriber, well, you just click the little box. And then, having done so, you're done. Put in the number and walk away. I mean, you hit, like, next or what the hell ever. But that, yeah. For those who don't like PayPal, we have the Patreon campaign ongoing. Patreon.com/Bob Kincaid. And that's relatively easy, too. And so there will be, I'll sit down over the weekend and do another round of bumper stickers heading out to make sure everybody who needs them gets them. We do deeply appreciate everybody, and by we I mean Agnes and me, not me and that mouse in my pocket. We deeply appreciate everybody who does contribute and does keep this on the air, because that's the way this community continues to operate. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Got that part out of the way now. Good, I feel much better. We do appreciate it, because it means that we continue to be able to deliver this content, this programming, to people who want it, whomever wants it, however they want it, whether they can, quote-unquote, afford it or not. It's free. Nobody's ever charged anything for anything here. So, thank you. Thank you one and all, and on behalf of the entire community. And thanks to this evening's This evening's group of, you know, we few, we happy few subscribers, we've only got the $200 to raise. We caught up with what was remaining last night, and that's thanks to Felicia, and thank you to Sylvia. Thank you, Sylvia, and thank you to Michael. Thank you very kindly, all three of you, for knocking out what remained from last night so that we've only got a regular evening's fundraising to deal with this evening. Okay? Okay. Ah, where to go? Where to go this? Well, I mean, obviously it's Friday on the front porch. And it is, I'll note early on, and I hope this does not become the case, two out of the three people who live in this house have some sort of bug. And it's the same bug. And the two out of the three people are Agnes and Ferg. It hasn't gotten to me yet. I hope it doesn't, because they sound miserable. So I don't know, I'll sleep with like a string of garlic around my neck. I don't know what you do, but I really don't want it. It seems to be some sort of upper respiratory nastiness. A little bit of semi-breaking news, first of all, like I said, it's the 22nd day of September, 2017, and that happens to be the autumnal equinox. There are, of course, two times per year when the length of day and the length of night are roughly equal. And that's the autumnal equinox and the vernal equinox. And they're about 6 months apart. And they signal, in the case of the vernal equinox, the first day of spring, and the autumnal equinox, curiously, the first day of autumn. And for me, the equinoxes are the equinoxes and the solstices. Represent a time when the day when the fabric of time is, and I'm not trying to get metaphysical or spooky or religious or anything like that. But the equinoxes are days when the fabric of time becomes a little bit thinner, because of all the days of the year, you know that we have a connection to humanity in the past for just about as long as humanity has been conscious. Because those 4 days, the equinoxes and the solstices, are the days that you kind of have to figure out in order to understand where you are relative to the sun's path. And so you know that people were paying attention to this. And the neat thing is, it doesn't matter what your ethnicity is, whether you are Asian or indigenous American, or European, or one of the many, many different ethnic types that arise on the continent of Africa. Doesn't matter. Everybody, every culture on this planet has, to one degree or another, been able to recognize the equinoxes and the solstices, and have thus ordered their lives around them. And if nothing else, it's a reminder of how not very different we are. You know, we are different in understanding, different in culture, but not very different at all in terms of the basic things that are required of us to be successful. I'm not talking about in a capitalist sense, but successful as a species. The autumnal equinox once upon a time meant, well, by God, if you haven't got all your harvesting done, you'd better get it done quick, because cold weather's on its way. Of course, what is the autumnal equinox for us is the vernal equinox for our friends up over, down under in the southern hemisphere. So just a little thought in that regard. And yes, it's true. I did say a minute ago that everything here is free. Well, everything except, well, I'll just ask you a question. Have you tried cantankerous cabbage from Horn Labs? For only $29.95 a month, we'll send you a month's supply of cantankerous cabbage, and for only $60, that's still haven't figured that out. $29.95, $10, $8, $9. For only 10 cents more, we'll send you a 2 month supply at $60. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And cantankerous cabbage will fill you with the vim, vigor, and vitality of all its cabbagey goodness. You know, I mentioned the equinox. Well, cantankerous cabbage is one of those vegetables that's been terribly, terribly important to humanity over the years. Whether it's being made by Asian people on the Korean Peninsula into kimchi, or whether it is being carried westward across the steppes by the Mongolian tribes, or whether it's being rotted in a different way and turned into sauerkraut by the ancient tribes of old Germania. Cantankerous cabbage. Here at Horn Labs, we use a proprietary funking process to rot our cabbage in and create the probiotic goodness that fills every single capsule of cantankerous cabbage. You know, I've never much cared for cabbage, and the only way I can stand to get my nutritional needs met by cabbage is by taking cantankerous cabbage from Horn Labs. Get yours today. You may be a little more cantankerous, but by golly, you'll be a little more cantankerous. Cantankerous cabbage, only from Horn Labs. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, yes. A little bit of breaking news, and it is, this is one of those moments when the program becomes a little bit of a time capsule. Maybe the digital archives of this program will be dug up by either the 6-foot-tall race of sentient cockroaches that will follow us as the next dominant species on the planet after we've done trashing it. Or perhaps by amorphous, blob-like, multi-limbed alien archaeologists from Norblap 9. You don't know. There's no way of knowing what sort of things will provide a lodestone to understanding these times. So on this autumnal equinox of 2017, a note. As we speak, terrified people in the American colonial possession of Puerto Rico are being, as quickly as possible, evacuated from their homes. they are being so evacuated, 70,000 of them, because a dam, the Guajataca Dam in western Puerto Rico, a dam in the mountains there that that holds back the Guajataca River, which flows northward toward the coast and the ocean. The Guajataca Dam is on the verge of failure. The danger of failure is described by the authorities as imminent. It is said by the people who are charged with the business of knowing these things that the dam may actually burst in short order, and a tremendous wall of water would then rush down the Guajataca River Valley and inundate coastal areas of Puerto Rico that are still suffering under the lash of Hurricane Maria. The weather there is still bad. It is still nigh impossible to move freely about the island. And those and that fact is hindering the ability of potential rescuers to get people to safety. People are being told to go to high ground, get above the dam as quickly as they possibly can. The BBC, Marty tells me, is reporting that the dam has failed. This would be a disaster on top of a disaster. And it also represents the sort of not exactly benign neglect with which we have treated our colonial possession in Puerto Rico. Steve in New York with a note says, you know what our Puerto Rican fellow citizens are? America's first climate refugees. That could very well be true. So just take note of that. And, you know, a question. How is it that Hawaii, which is much further away from the American mainland than Puerto Rico, Hawaii became a state? Alaska has an entire nation geographically between us and it is a state. And yet Puerto Rico remains a territorial possession. I'm not saying I have the answer. I'm not saying the answer is a good thing or a bad thing or is a reflection of good or bad. But why? There's a substantial independence and nationhood movement on the island. And yet, on the other hand, Puerto Ricans are American citizens and can travel freely to and from the mainland United States. Is it a tax thing? Is it an imperial thing? Is it a capitalist thing? Because, of course, even before Maria arrived, Puerto Rico, for the last year, has been in an economic crisis of monumental proportions. I don't know. But I think it's probably safe to say that we, as the imperial overlords of Puerto Rico, have ignored it and have at the same time, of course, exploited it. Interesting. I'm also being told on this autumnal equinox here in the Northern Hemisphere by Marty that the U.S. Geological Survey is saying there was a 5.7 magnitude on the Richter scale earthquake 135 miles west of Ferndale, which is approximately 17 miles south-southwest of Eureka. In answer to my question about Puerto Rico, Silent R. Lamar simply says, wrong color, Bob. That probably has a lot to do with it. And probably wrong language, too. Because, of course, if Puerto Rico were to have statehood, then, by Jiminy, you would immediately have a new growth industry in God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, family values, Republicans out there screaming for, and Puerto Ricans better learn to speak English, which is the only language of Merca, and which God Almighty intended for Merca to speak by making English the first language that ever got spoke here. All of which is, of course, because they're right-wingers, you know, wrong. But you know that would be the case, yes. By the way, more folks wandering into the chat room, and welcome to the chat room, the midweek pinch hit utility chat room moderator Steve from Georgistan, who says, I got slammed at work, got here as quick as I could. No worries, Steve. All around, great guy. No worries. No worries at all. So there is that in our considerations. Now, one question. Are we done with the health care discussion for a little while? Because John McCain emerged from his hiding place and declared today that no, he would not vote in favor of the Graham-Cassidy bill, which of course would impose brutally Republican fixes, and by fixes I mean destruction, to the Affordable Care Act. Yeah, he says he's not going to vote for it. Now, I might remind you that Graham Cassidy is one of the primary co-sponsors, is Lindsey Graham, and this is going to be a problem. I mean, I would hate to hear the pillow talk tonight. John, how could you betray me like that? Well, Lindsey, my friend. Yeah. Because apparently some Republican governors even have figured out that despite the constitutionally sketchy inducements for certain senators to support the bill, that the money was still going to run out in 2026, or by the end of 2026. So even though the bill robs Peter to pay Paul, even though it screws states like California and Washington and Oregon, Minnesota, West Virginia, states that took the Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act, and in many ways provides that money to states that did not want to participate in Kenyan care, even those states run out of money at the end of 2026. the single largest beneficiary of the Graham-Cassidy bill would be Texas. Imagine that. Texas would get a humongous block grant that the governor of Texas could then use in whatever way he chose. He wouldn't even have to apply it to health care. Charming, isn't it? But some state governors, not the Texas state governor, have figured out that it would be a disaster. Yeah. So I don't know. Something just makes me think we're still not done with this, because people like Mitch McConnell and, of course, Comrade Kumquat are not going to be happy until they have death sentences, death warrants, signed, sealed, and delivered for tens of thousands of otherwise innocent American citizens. Now, are they? So John McCain said he's not supporting it, and supposedly that puts the kibosh on it, but I'm just enough of a paranoid. Maybe not even paranoid. I'm just cautious enough to think that that may not be enough to kill it. But that really was a sleazy bit of business. The fact that in order to try to get Lisa Murkowski's vote, they inserted language in the bill that said, well, all of this applies to everybody but Alaska. Alaska gets to keep having money. Oh, and there was, I forget who it was. I don't know if it was Cassidy from Louisiana. I don't know which godforsaken misanthrope it was from the Republican Party who kept talking about how the Graham-Cassidy bill would provide health care monies for, and get this, because this is a quote, states that were bypassed by Obamacare. I'll take a couple of seconds here because the minute you heard that quote, you knew what it meant, and so you are busily looking for some piece of furniture that you can kick while yelling, son of a... No, really? Because the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act didn't bypass any states. The Medicaid expansion was for every state. In fact, it was mandatory. The way the PPACA was originally written, and just the audacious, authoritarian, dictatorial, tyrannical, Kenyan nature of this is enough to make you scream. The way it was originally written, every state in the union had to accept free money. God almighty. I can hardly stand to say that. It's disgusting to contemplate. The fact that good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Alabamians and Mississippians and Texans, Georgians and North Carolinians and South Carolinians and Tennesseans, Kansans and Wisconsinionites, and Idahoans would have to accept free money from the federal government. God, that's just nauseating. Fortunately, America's most brilliant and evil Republican, John Roberts, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, saved the states from that vicious and brutal fate by saying that the federal government didn't have no business making no state take no money that it didn't want to take. Then you couldn't make them take all that free money, because that wouldn't be constitutional. And so it was that places like Texas and Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia and North and South Carolina, etc., were free to look at the federal government and say, "No, by Jiminy, by cracky, we've got some morals and some decency and some ethics and some standards and some Christian family values down here, and you cannot, sir, you cannot force us to take free federal money to provide health care for working people, working poor people in our states. The nerve of you, sir, you godforsaken, pardon me for taking the Lord's name in vain, poltroon, sir. Were it not the 21st century, I would feel compelled to call out that Kenyan Muslim usurper on the field of honor. But of course, being a Kenyan Muslim usurper, he has no honor. The very idea of forcing decent people to take free money from the federal government. Oh, it is shocking to the conscience, I tell you. See how it works? But, yeah, it was all going to be rectified by taking money away from the states that accepted the free money and giving it to the states that didn't want the free money, except that they want it now, since they wouldn't actually have to use the free money to provide health care to the working poor in their respective, and understand, respective, not respectable, states. But supposedly, that is all over now. Or is it? Supposedly, the Senate has to do what it does, and the whole bill has to be done by a week from tomorrow, the 30th day of September. If, that is, they want to pass it with a simple majority. However, writing over at Think Progress, Addie Baird points out, the thing is, the September 30th deadline is a hoax. Republicans can begin a new reconciliation process in January, meaning next year, the bill, or another version of repeal and replace, could see proper hearings, debate, and get scored and still pass with a simple majority starting in January. And that's one of the... What is that old quote? If it is even a quote, maybe it's just an aphorism. The cost of liberty is eternal vigilance, or eternal vigilance is the cost of liberty, something like that. Sit, Liberty, sit. We know it here in the sacrifice zone, because we know that the predators are always looking to take something, and that they never, ever really go away. I mean, isn't it interesting that they hollered Obama war on coal for 8 years, and every now and then when an election would come around, the coal companies would lay off a few hundred workers and say, "Well, we had to do that because the Kenyan war on coal, you know, can't be helped." And then even though there is no appreciable change in the international coal market, lo and behold, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini comes into office, and all of a sudden, coal workers are being hired. It's almost like it was a great big dodge, a big scam.
big hustle.
Because, you know, maybe it was. Because, you know, it was. Mm-hmm.
The predators are always lurking just outside the reach of the light and heat from our pathetic picket fires. And they'll always come back, because as long as this country generates wealth, there will be conservatives who want to take it away from you and take it away from us. So we'll have to wait and see. Is there any kind of firewall against action in January, in the second session of this Congress, when it convenes? Well, if there is, it is the idea of an election year, midterm election year. One of the reasons they were so anxious to get us done, I mean, get health care done, over the last several months, over the course of the last 6-7 months, is precisely because that was as far away from an election as they could get. And they could do their dirty business and perhaps pass legislation to kill 20 or 30,000 American citizens and take health care away from tens of millions more. And then they could count on the American people to have forgotten by the time that they were polluting the public airwaves and the satellite and cable airwaves with ads calling Democrats, gun-hating, Bible-eating, fetus-chomping liberals. It'll be a little harder to do that with primary season upon them for House and Senate races. And then, of course, a general election on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November of next year. And that's really about all we got. And it all depends on how hardcore they are. And the hardcores aren't going away. Even as we speak, and granted they're a time zone away, so it's 5:38 p.m. there. Even as we speak, in Huntsville, Alabama, and this is telling, in Huntsville, Alabama, the maggots, or at least some of them, are all a titter, working themselves into a frothy lather, because Donald Trump, their hero, their savior, their messiah, is a fixin' to have a rally for his chosen Republican Senate candidate, Big Luther Strange. As Jim noted last night, well, Tangerine Tiberius is headed to Alabama to get him some Strange. Now, what's interesting is there was a Roy Tola Moore rally last night. And I mentioned this because of having mentioned the hardcores. You know who was at the Roy Tola Moore rally last night? Well, not just Roy Tola Moore, who got up in front of the faithful and stood there and lectured them and probably gave them fake quotes from the founders to tell them that, you know, and of course Thomas Jefferson had a close personal relationship with his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And lots of clapping, which is, of course, not true. Jefferson was what we would have called an agnostic today. They called themselves deists back then. But at that rally for Roy Tola Moore, which I remind you, Asa told me last night, I have invented an Arabic word, which I've never done before, and I'm terribly, terribly proud of. God's visage. God's visage Moore. When you look upon Roy Moore, you look upon the face of the Almighty himself. Roy Tola Moore. And I'm sure there are many who actually believe that shit. In addition to Roy Tola Moore, there to work up the faithful into a big steamy frenzy was none other than Godzilla from Wasilla herself, having emerged from whatever spider hole she's been living in these days. Sarah Palin showed up to work people into a frenzy. Also showing up was Louis Asparagus Gohmert, who will not tolerate the casting of aspersions on his asparagus. And that website that rhymes with light and fart has also endorsed Roy Tola Moore and is actively advocating on his behalf. This leaves, this makes for a vicious contest between Big Luther Strange and Roy Tola Moore. Moore Strange. How do you like that? Roy Tola Moore, by the way, who once said that homosexuality was on a par, was exactly the same as having sex with a cow. Now, we might find this statement to be outrageous, but do please remember that his last name begins with Moo. Right. And while I have dared hope, as I said, well, I've dared hope that they will just tear themselves into tiny little pieces and that Republicans, you know, the hardcore, cancerous, dead-ender, hard-case knot. It was God damn Luther Strange, and the other one, God damn Roy Tola Moore. They're not going to. They'll come together. They'll support whoever the Republican nominee is. You know why? Because they want power. And as goddamn dumb as the maggots are, they're not so goddamn dumb that they don't understand that before they can do anything, they first have to have power. And so they'll get behind whoever wins. And by the time the general election rolls around, they will all be vociferous supporters of whomever the nominee is against the onset of creeping Kenyan liberalism. G. Douglas Jones, the man who actually put away the fucking Klansmen who murdered little girls by bombing a church in Birmingham, Alabama, in 1963. Mm-hmm. Because, see, they don't get lost in notions of ideological purity. They want to win because they have goals they want to accomplish. And so they are not troubled by such ideas. Now, I mentioned that the rally is taking place in Huntsville, Alabama. This in itself has a certain amount of importance. Back in the first half of the 20th century, well, go even further back, Huntsville in Madison County, Alabama, was a sleepy little North Alabama village just north of the banks of the Tennessee River. And it had its own little historical moments. For instance, if I'm not mistaken, Frank James. You know, Jesse and Frank James. Frank James was, I believe, tried in federal court in Huntsville, Alabama. And along the way, Huntsville, Alabama got itself a military installation later on. It became known as the Redstone Arsenal. And the Army's Redstone Missile was associated with that facility. Also, at one point in time, his rise toward the Olympus of right-wing broadcasting, that life support system for a haircut, Sean Hannity job, worked in radio in Huntsville, Alabama. But the most important thing about Huntsville, Alabama was something that happened in the aftermath of the Second World War, when eager to obtain for ourselves the technical and technological and engineering advances of the Third Reich rocketry program, we provided a safe haven for many of the folks who had worked for said Reich at their facility at Peenemünde, among them being a brilliant scientist by the name of Werner von Braun. And von Braun wound up at Huntsville. And so there was a massive infusion of federal tax dollars, first for defense and then for the infant space program. And this, in turn, fostered a gigantic leap in technology that, in turn, affected the local culture and caused an absolute economic boom in Huntsville. And so Huntsville had a population that was probably more educated than most in that state. And there was a significant focus on science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, what we now refer to as STEM, in that area. The public school system blossomed and flourished. But now, in 2017, on this day of the vernal equinox, perhaps we can say that with the coming rally there featuring the Clementine Caligula, that's all pretty much over. There's still a good bit of industry in and around Huntsville and extending over toward Decatur. But there was also a fair amount of what passed for liberalism, at least in Alabama, that arose out of North Alabama and the Huntsville area and the Shoals area where I was raised. And something like that is absolutely incompatible with, Trump. So just kind of bear that in mind if you follow the stories about it after they're written. So, for me, one of the highlights of my childhood were the occasional trips we'd take maybe 2, 3, 4 times a year to Huntsville. Not Birmingham or Nashville, but Huntsville. And the first time I, as a kid, got taken to the Space and Rocket Center, there were just my brain was just a big chain reaction of scientific and technical fascination just with the consideration of where the space program could take us. Of course, we have no manned space program now. Not much to speak of, at least. Note coming in from James, Senator/Governor. I'm not well acquainted with Alabama politics, but the way this kind of thing works in a captured state, especially in a close election, is that the loser winds up being elected governor. But wouldn't that be a great ticket, as you put it, more strange? I could get behind that for the comedy. No, it really wouldn't be that funny, would it? No. This race is atypical because, see, Roy Moore started out as just a little pissant circuit judge in Etowah County, which is Gadsden, Alabama. Gee, I wonder where it got that name. Gadsden. But he rose to national prominence, or at least notoriety, or infamy, when he came upon the hustle of hanging a copy of the Ten Commandments in his courtroom, which, of course, was a giant violation of the Constitution and particularly the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. And he knew a good thing when he saw it. So he parlayed that and his conservative family values into a career on the Alabama Supreme Court and ultimately the chief justiceship of the Alabama Supreme Court, and along the way he also parlayed it into a foundation that he could then use to pay himself and his wife $1 million a year for, administering the foundation, the administrative costs. There's a lot of work goes into foundation administering. Yes. He then took his Ten Commandments hustle, which was, oh my God, it was playing so good among the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual types, Christians, that he became Chief Justice of Alabama and at one point in time put a great big Ten Commandments rock in front of the Supreme Court of the state of Alabama, which then had to be ordered removed because, again, It was a blatant violation of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. And once again, Roy Moore got on his ladder and crawled back up on the cross and talked about how he was being persecuted because he loved Jesus so much. And then along came the Obergefell decision. And Roy Moore said, I don't care what no federal judge says. I'm hereby directing all the judges and probate judges in the state of Alabama not to let no homosexuals get married. Because Jesus. And then he was removed from office as the Chief Justice of the state of Alabama, which then caused him to have to get the ladder back out and climb back up on the cross and nail himself back in. I'm being persecuted because I support biblical marriage, just as Jesus and God, his daddy, wanted us to have. Oh, he's a brilliant hustler. And when Donald Trump started running for president, Roy Moore said, I cannot support a man who is an obvious adulterer who has been married to three separate women hoes. And the mouth breathers and knuckle walkers clapped madly about that, too. And so he's parlayed it into considerable wealth and no small amount of power. And now he's running for Senate. The whole Alabama Senate thing is a complete soap opera. You remember Robert Bentley, who was governor of the state of Alabama? And he was a God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian governor of the state of Alabama. But then there was that time that his upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered evangelical wife of many, many years, like 50, just quietly left her cell phone with the recording function on, down to a little room. At Gulf Shores, Alabama, down to the beach, because that's where you go. That's where people like to go down the beach. And it just happened to capture the voice of Governor Robert Bentley as he said to a woman with whom he worked who was not his wife of 50 years, well, honey, we gonna have to start closing the door if we doing this kind of thing. I just love putting my hands on your Christian breasts like I'm doing right now. No, really, I'm not kidding. Which then occasioned the First Baptist Church of Tuscaloosa to undeaconize Robert Bentley and then ask him politely to please leave. You got to be some serious screwed up to get a Baptist church to ask a governor of the state of Alabama to get the out of its congregation. And then there were some legal issues attendant upon it because the woman whose Christian breastises he was a groping of, she was a part of government too. And the person who was charged to investigate this little Christian tryst was none other than Alabama Attorney General Big Luther Strange, which he proceeded to do and proceeded to figure out that, yes, Robert Bentley was as crooked as a broke-back snake. But along comes Donald Trump, wins the presidency, and names Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, a senator, to be the Attorney General of the United States of America. which creates a Senate opening, at which point Robert Bentley said, I got just the man, and appointed Big Luther to fill Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III's seat. I mean, this shit is, if you were to bring down zombie Flannery O'Connor, zombie William Faulkner, and give them, you know, a 5-gallon hog's head of brown liquor and tell them to get busy and write a story, and you gave them what I just described to you as the plot points, they'd go, fuck it, we're leaving. I couldn't get away with that. I mean, Faulkner would look at you and go, look, you know, I narrated an entire section of a novel through the mind and the voice of an idiot. But this is too much. Fuck it. Flannery O'Connor would say, really? Really? This is what I got to work with? I mean, I wrote, a hard man is good to find. I mean, a good man is hard to find. But this is just nuts. Eudora Welty'd be like, no. I'll have some standards, sir. Because this is Southern Gothic at its grand extreme. I mean, this takes the idea of what's his name, Mark Sanford in South Carolina, who was a romping on with a woman, not his wife, and saying that he was on the that he was hiking the Appalachian Trail while he was doing it, when in fact he was in Buenos Aires, which is Spanish for bed, and just chucks that right in the trash. This is a story, the plot of which would be rejected by Harlequin romances. Robert Penn Warren, who gave us All the King's Men, would look at this and go, no. It's just too stupid. Nobody'd buy it. And after all the King's Men is a fictionalized account of the life and murder of Huey Long. And this would be too much for Robert Penn Warren. And so that's how Big Luther got to the Senate. And that's how Roy Tolamore built himself the necessary base with which to contend for said Senate seat. And it's all terribly, terribly fascinating. Because now you've got the likes of Caribou Barbie and the single most bizarre member of the entire House of Representatives, the most bizarre member of the Freedom Caucus, and that website and Steve Bannon that rhymes with light and fart, arrayed against the man that they said was the second coming of Jesus Christ himself in the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. And the campaign down there has been as filthy as you could possibly want. I mean, this is father against son, brother against brother, mother against sister, uncle, daddy. It's a civil war. It's an absolute political civil war in the state of Alabama. But I return to my thesis. When all is said and done, because they are far smarter than our side is, they will unify in the name of achieving power. Because they want it. Because there are things that they want to do, no matter how evil or wicked they want the things they want to do are, they want to achieve power so as to achieve those goals. They set the goals, and then they go about the business of achieving requisite power with which to accomplish those goals. We over on our side can't do that. But her emails!
I can never vote for corruption. Lesser of two evils is still evil.
I'm reminded of a note that I received from our dear friend Joy not too long back. She said, and this touches upon the vice president, Mike Pencilneck Geek. You may have heard in the past, and by the way, he's been out there making, you know, of course, because he's a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian. He's been out there telling lies. One of the lies he's telling is using more fake quotes from Thomas Jefferson, things that Thomas Jefferson never said, in this particular instance in regard to health care. But there is a school of thought, if you can call it that, that says that, well, you know, if by hook or by crook or by some operation of political miracle, we were to get rid of Donald Trump, well, we'd be stuck with Mike Pence. And having heard that, it occasioned this note from Joy. As I catch up on podcasts doing a horn binge at the moment, I unequivocally reject these people who are lesser eviling Trump versus Pence at me when they re-fucking fused to lesser evil with me in November. Pence would be worse than Trump. Okay, so you do admit that evil has greater, lesser values and that we fare better under lesser evil and greater evil? You're admitting that? Okay, great. So if Trump is lesser evil than Pence, would you be keen to guess who is a little bit less evil than Trump? Fuck you. We're allowed to lesser evil Republicans, but heaven forfend we lesser evil on this side of the aisle. I say we instigate change. More effectively when we have more tools, rather than fewer tools. But I'm funny that way. That's all for now, Joy says. I had to get that off my chest. Now back to my happy listening. Yeah. Isn't that interesting? You get the lesser evil argument with Pence and Trump, but no, not over here. No, it's ideological purity or nothing. Definitely pure, definitely pure. Right. So here we are at the 8 minute past the hour mark. A note coming from our buddy Reverbo, who says, cabbage gives some people gas and they can have a stankly presentation. Is the formula for cantankerous cabbage gas-free? Oh, hell no, Reverbo. Our special proprietary process that produces cantankerous cabbage is known. It is noteworthy for the gas that remains in the cabbage. That's why it's cantankerous. Cantankerous cabbage only from Horn Labs. And if you take it and all your friends and neighbors take it, you won't even notice. But you will be jet-propelled, which is almost as good as having helium-filled pants. You'll have filled pants. It just won't be helium. Just saying. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. We, Ron says, are in deep doo-doo. Have you tried cantankerous cabbage? We have Orange Crush to thank for the resurgence of Sarah Palin. When someone this obviously stupid and unqualified can ascend to the national stage, we are almost beyond hope. That's why the phrase I've been using of late is circling the drain. I left one out, that's true. Ron suggests, well, you know, maybe not Faulkner, maybe not Welty, maybe not Flannery O'Connor. I believe Tennessee Williams could work with this outline, though. And I think you might very well be right. Meanwhile, Keith says, awesome asparagus. No, we've already done that. From Horn Labs, new product of it, is it? No, that's been out for weeks now. We've sold hundreds of cases of our asparagus supplement. Yes. That's the filibobster for this Friday on the front porch. I'll note that we began the evening needing to raise $200 to finish the week. And that's where we still are. Still need that 10 at 20, 20 at 10, 1 at 2, 2 at 1, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, etc. And hopefully that will be remedied. And I guess we're at the point where we'll call that a minor Horn community, family community congregation, minor community made miracle. If we can raise that in the next 1 hour and 47 minutes. So break time. Listen, as usual, I'm administering Friday on the front porch. And if you want to get involved in the conversation, connect with me on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. Connect with me on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. And you know what? I'm gonna try an experiment. For those of you who don't Skype, I don't know if I'll be able to pull this off or not. But for those of you who don't Skype but do phone, if you would like to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, at least one of you can, 304-574-8178. We'll see if I can add you to the group call. But let's get Friday on the Front Porch going to see what's on folks' minds. I've still got some stuff on mine. And see where the conversation takes us this evening. Because after all, what we do here is called conversation radio. I don't know. My gut feeling is that Roy Tola Moore is going to pull this. Is going to pull this off in Alabama. And that'll mean that Big Luther will go back to his 20-year lobbying career. But you just don't know. What we do know is this is Conversation Radio, listener-supported. And we also know I'm Bob Kincaid. Let's get it going.
It was an early morning yesterday. I was up before the dawn. Stay, but I must be moving on. Like a king without a castle, like a queen without a throne. I'm an early morning lover, and I must be moving on. Yeah, yeah. Now I believe in what you say is the undisputed truth. To have things my own way, to keep me in my youth. Like a ship without an anchor, like a slave without a chain, just the thought of those sweet ladies as they shiver through my veins. And I will go on shining, shining like brand new. I'll never look behind me, my troubles will be few. Goodbye, stranger. Oh,
and something you just can't tell. And some they will and some they won't, and some it's just as well. You can laugh at my behavior, and that'll never bother me. Say the devil is my savior, but I don't pay no heed. And I will go out shining, you're shining like brand new. I'll never look behind me, my troubles will be few.
Goodbye, stranger.
Couldn't resist, you know, Goodbye Stranger, Supertramp. Now there are all the members of Supertramp still around? I don't know. That'd be a reunion band I'd love to see. If they're still around, I'll bet you Billable Rick's already seen them somewhere out in L.A.
No, I can't say I have. I wish I had, Bob.
No,
but I did see Petty last night.
Oh, did you?
His 40th anniversary tour, yeah, and I'm actually scheduled to go back tonight, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a great show. Great show. This will be the third time I've seen him this summer.
Yeah, well, they are, apparently back in 2010, Supertramp had a 40th anniversary celebration tour. They have announced their, back in 2015, they announced their first tour in over 4 years. It was a 25-date European tour, so, you know, cross your fingers. Those were some great records.
Yeah, I'd love to see them.
Those were some great records.
Oh, yeah.
Well, welcome to Friday on the Front Porch.
Hey, Bob.
And so you're seeing Tom Petty two nights in a row?
Yeah, it's kind of a funny story. Not funny, but kind of unusual. After I saw Petty at the festival in Pasadena this past June, he announced that he was going to be playing at the Hollywood Bowl. And I thought it was like going to be the last night of his tour, his 40th anniversary tour, on a Thursday night. So I tried to get tickets, and the only tickets I could get were like 20 rows apart or 20 seats apart in the same row. And so then he, like a couple of weeks later, after I got those tickets, he announced like a second and third show on Friday and then on the following Monday. And so then I got two tickets together on for tonight's show. And I tried to sell the ones for Thursday night, but I couldn't sell them. And so I went with my son last night to the show. And even though the seats were like, you know, 20 seats apart, we kind of moved about to like, you know, to empty seats until the people who, you know, had left their seats, came back, and then we'd move again. And, you know, one of those deals, which isn't necessarily the best thing to do. So I'm actually going with, I've got a first date tonight to go with her to the show tonight. So a gal I talked to a few months ago, but put things on hold once I started going out with, you know, my girlfriend, who became my girlfriend at the time. So were no longer
operative. And, operative phrase at the time. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. So I'm back on the market, so to speak. So.
Yeah.
Well, one of those things, you know.
Well, don't take them shopping, okay?
No. God, no. Believe you me, I've learned my lesson on that one.
Well, let's check in real quick with Jim. Hey, Jim.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
I think we're all well, and you?
No, okay. Just listening to the conversation, and I was added to it. Just one of those things on Gospel Wings, like Cole Porter wrote.
So we know that this will theoretically work. Doing a phone call into Skype and adding it to the Skype to Skype conversation. So
I hear you 5x5.
You're a part of a history making broadcast then, I guess. I don't know.
Oh my God, I'm going to have to. I don't know what I'll do, but I'm glad it happened.
Yeah, you know, it mark the date.
I'll do it.
All right, let's check in and see who else we got. I have no name attached to this, but we got somebody from the 952 area code. Welcome.
Yes, this would be Roger in Minneapolis.
Oh, hey, Roger. How are you? Good to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm riding the waves. How are you?
Probably doing the same. Different wave, same, you know, same.
Yeah. Yeah. I have been grappling with the loss of both of my parents in the course of about 1 week this spring.
Oh, my God.
Yes. They were not together. They had been separated for nearly 40 years. But nonetheless, I learned of the passing of my dad. And a couple of days later, I learned that my mother was in the hospital, and I went to spend the last 3 days of her life with her there. It all happened in a matter of a week, and the repercussions have been a process that has got me seeing reality somewhat differently than I ever have before. A grieving process that's accompanied by a real, probably overly worked sense of mindfulness that then throws the whole thing into a different corner than one would expect. I find myself thrown into examination of almost a sense of existence and consciousness being very tenuous things. And so there's that. It's kind of heavy stuff, but it's interesting. And so I mention it because part of what it brings very forcefully to one's eye, to my eye, is the power of every tiny moment. If you allow it to be that, it's just. And a sense of astonishment at being conscious, at being alive. So there's that.
well, there is, but I mean that's sort of what you're describing is a sort of existential awakening, isn't it?
Well, it's an ongoing one, and you know, today I always have placed a lot of freight in those 4 days of the year that we have kind of the turnings of trends from the point of view of being on an Earth in a solar system. And today's a special day. Happy beginning of fall, folks.
Yes, indeed, and it'll naturally, you being in Minnesota, you'll be feeling it a little more quickly than, say, people further south of you. But I can't. There's around here, you got a lot of people going, yeah, I think we're going to have an early fall, because the leaves are. I mean, it just seems a little early. I mean, like I said, the wild cherry tree has already gone from green to gold to some of them are already brown, and they're already blowing off the trees. So
we've had perceptible fall color here for nearly 3 weeks, but today it's 94 degrees outside.
Okay, I take everything back.
No, I'm just saying, we're having a little heat wave here. 94 degrees outside, no kidding.
No, I was pretty
joking.
It was pretty toasty here today as well, and I couldn't, you know, there's a certain amount of, sadness or something that comes with it where you go, we're not going to have many more of these.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the snow will fly for you before it does for me here. Well, let me move a little further around the room. Let's check in with Steve from Georgia Stan. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Bob, what's going on, man?
How's the dryer?
Fixed, but my wallet is much lighter.
Well, you had a radical cashectomy performed.
Yeah, what are you going to do? And I even had a 20% off coupon, but Sears, they still stuck it to me, man.
Oh. But you could...
I had to call Sears because they have the parts. You know, if I just called Joe Fix It, he'd have to come look at it and then go to the parts store, hope they had it, maybe not, you know, so this is... Seemed like the least path of resistance. And I want to shout out to my friend Jim out there. How you doing, Jim?
Good evening, sir.
Nice to finally cross paths with you.
It's very nice to cross paths with you.
Thank you, sir.
I've been very impressed with you and your conversations with Bob.
Well,
I really have.
Well, likewise. And Bob, a little horticulture. And you probably know this. You're smart.
Well, you know, you can lead a horticulture, but you can't make her think.
Oh. I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, was that Dorothy Parker?
I think so.
Yeah.
I do believe it was.
As far as leaves changing and colors and all that, has nothing to do with temperature. They measure the amount of uninterrupted darkness, and that's what triggers the changes.
Well, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, yep. Google it. Don't believe anything I say. Research it. But that's the way it works.
Well, so are they changing earlier because we had a lot of really, really cloudy days in August or something?
No, I doubt it. I mean, they measure the amount of total darkness, not cloudy days, you know. But that may play into it. I don't know. I'm not a scientist, but... I do know.
And you don't play, and you don't play one on the radio, and neither do I.
No.
But you know, you did use the word horticulture, so you know, you got a cowbell for that, and right.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. And it's been a while since we've heard from Tracy, and I'm just eager to. Tracy, how are you?
Hey, guys. How the heck are you guys doing?
I won't speak for the group.
Hey,
but,
Tracy.
You know, it's Friday. And I love Fridays around here.
Welcome back, Tracy.
I know it's been a while. I've been battling my demons and my depression and just kind of been hiding and missing you guys, trying to keep, you know, my head above water and just, you know, just trying to imagine a world where there's no that person in the White House. I was watching TV today, and I don't know how my television wound up on the Harry Connick show, but Neil deGrasse Tyson was on. I love that guy. He's just amazing. And he was talking about the, I don't know what it's called, but I didn't hear what it was called, but it was about the Scientific Council or something. But it was formed back by Abraham Lincoln. And, you know, basically, you know, scientists basically informing the government about science, because he figured, you know, we don't know stuff as the government, but we need scientists to tell us what we need to do about, you know, the weather and about, and to inform us as government officials what to do because, you know, science. And basically he was saying, you can't, just because you don't agree with it doesn't mean it's not true. This is science. You can't, you know, just because you don't like it, because without saying, he was referring to, you know, the idiots that are running our country right now. Just because you don't disagree with it doesn't mean it doesn't, it's not fact, you fucking pieces of shit. He couldn't say that because, you know, he was on television.
That's nowhere.
But that's what he, I know that's what he wanted to say. But, you know, between him, you know, telling North Korea that, you know, in one sentence saying that I'm going, you know, that America is great and patient, but we're going to destroy North Korea if you don't do what I say. And then North Korea saying that, you know, what did he call him? A maniacal, what did he call him?
Dotard.
Yeah.
It's a perfect word for him, too. You know?
And that word had been, know, that word had been too long out of circulation as well. I mean, just as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, it's a much better word than retard, which has become obviously pejorative and painful, you know.
Right. But then I did get some hope today because the great and amazing Reverend Dr. William Barber was here in LA. I didn't get to hear the speech. I missed it, but I heard the whole speech this morning on Margaret Prescott's show on KPFK. And have you ever heard him speak, Bob?
Oh, yes.
Do you know who he is?
Oh, okay. Yes and yes.
He is, has everybody in the room heard of him? Does anybody not know who he is?
I don't really, I'm not that familiar with him. I may have heard of him in passing, so maybe you should enlighten us.
Moral Mondays in North Carolina, Rick.
Oh, okay. Now I know. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So he was here in LA on Tuesday. And of course I didn't see the email until Wednesday. That's how, you know, cause that's basically how my life runs. You know, he was here Tuesday and I see the email on Wednesday, but what I loved, like I said, I got to hear part of the speech this morning, and he was talking about the, you know, the more how we need people to become morally outraged. But my favorite part of the speech, when he was talking about white supremacists and how black people can be a white supremacist, it says if you vote for certain things, you are an accessory after the fact. Even if you are black. So that's what I love. It was a great speech. So that, you know, that kind of, that speech made my day. So that made me happy. And just talking about how, and he's for LGBTQ rights, which even made me happier to hear a black Pentecostal minister that's for LGBTQ rights. So that was very exciting as well. So that made me happy. So there you go. So that's me. So I'm going to sit back and just listen to you guys.
All right. Well, so, stand by. You know, jump in when the spirit moves you. Let's check in with John. Hey, John.
Hey, Bob. How's it going, everybody? Nice to hear from you, Tracy. Missed you.
Missed you too.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. You're loud and clear.
First of all, I want to start off. I got some bad news. I just got an email from the DCCC. Subject line: devastating. Opened it up, and here it says that. And I don't know if this is true because I just looked this up on Google, and I didn't really see anything about it. But Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski say they say the word "say." So I'm quoting Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins say they might vote for it. They say they might vote for this.
Well, Murkowski might, because on page 95 of the bill, it gives her the ACA Act all the way through like 2026. So they floated that carrot in front of her. They're not taking her Medicare or the Alaska Medicare away. So that's what they did. These fuckers are playing dirty, man. And I'm sorry to interrupt you, friend. You know, I just want to let you know what the hell is going on.
No, you're right. I heard it was page 85. But what was interesting was the clip that was played of Lindsey Graham, who declared he would never be part of any such shenanigans. Now, of course, that was 2 months ago.
Well, Bob, you know he was funding American government.
Say what?
You know what his PAC group is named?
No, I didn't.
Funding American government.
You are lying. You are lying, lying, lying. Jim, you are lying.
Oh, I've been accused of worse, but yeah, you're right.
I knew. No, that didn't take me long.
We've been to this rodeo before.
Yeah, so. I
can't believe these people. You know, I cannot believe these people. I don't mean to interrupt anybody, but, you know, Trump and his cohorts and these people in the Senate and the Congress, to me, it's a daymare, it's a nightmare, it's a trip to nowhere.
Well, exactly, and if you think for an instant about, you know, however many show up down in Huntsville this evening, and I bet it's going to be a small crowd, and he'll insist that it was the biggest crowd Huntsville has ever known, biggest. It was bigger than that time Bob got burnt by an exploding seed on his polyester shirt at the Kansas concert. It was a huge crowd.
I know what he's going to say. Yeah, I do.
But the thing is, virtually everybody in that audience stands to be significantly harmed by that goddamn health care bill, and they're going to stand there and clap for it. And it's in that moment that you realize, as you know, I've been saying, and you know, Scott and Punky say it, so we're screwed.
Yeah, the health benefits are going to be totally eviscerated.
Right, and even the people who have employer-provided health care, if the ACA isn't there, the health care doesn't have to provide it anymore. Uh-oh.
Yeah, I just wonder how it would impact them on federal, you know, retirees. I can just imagine what Blue Cross is going to do to me.
Well, if you're still within the tender mercies of that and not Medicare, it's Katie bar the door.
Well, I have Medicare too, because that's mandatory when you retire. You're made to take on Medicare. So I'm right there with you.
Well, let's check back over to John. Did that email kind of light a fire under you, or was it accompanied by a, can you please send us $5 so we can help stop Lisa Murkowski?
There you go.
Yeah, it was asking for money, so I don't know, but you know, I'm still worried, man, because and I'm not just worried for myself, but I am one. I do benefit from the ACA, but this is, I mean, what they're doing is murder. I'm sorry, that's what this is. It's fucking murder, and because they know they're not stupid people. They know what it's gonna do. They know. And, you know, I'm worried for a lot of people in this country that are going to lose them. You know how they said that it's going to, that 32 million is going to lose health care. The CBO scored that this week. That's conservative, small c. We're probably looking at 60 or 70 million people losing their health insurance because, you know, the subsidies, a lot of people benefit from that, man. And they're pretty much ending the Medicaid expansion as it is, as we know it. And a lot, and that for the rest of the people that benefit from the ACA gets their care through Medicaid. So this is really going to screw over a lot of people, and I really hope it causes an uproar. And I saw a tweet from Lindsey Graham, I think it was from last week, tweeted at Trump saying, "Help us, Mr. President. We're trying to help you." It's like, what? He's a billionaire. What are you helping him with? We need help, not him. Him and his family are going to never have to want or need anything. You know what I mean? So why is this billionaire president trying to take rip people's health care away from them? And we're right now, it's like I see this in my head. I'm envisioning a massive tug of war. People who really need this are trying to hang on to their health care as these right-wing fascists are trying to rip it from them.
I don't know.
You know, it's just.
Yeah, there was another one of those goddess of irony moments this week. I don't know if you caught it or not, John, but Ivanka came over to talk to Dr. Oz, and she talked about how after the birth of each of her children, she had experienced some postpartum depression. Now, I am not in any way denigrating or diminishing the anguish of postpartum depression. That's not what I'm saying. I'm talking about the fact that, you know, she was there and she had it. And he said, well, how'd you get over it? And she said, well, you know, I try to do some yoga. And, you know, here's this alleged billionaireess who's pissing and moaning about her postpartum depression at the same time that her daddy is trying to make sure that that mamas who have it and don't have $1 billion with which to calm themselves, that, you know, that they don't, that, you know, that they also don't have any resources with which to cope with it. You know, Jesus Christ, this is the kind of aristocratic cluelessness that gets you free tumbril rides. I mean, God Almighty.
Right. I don't believe anything that people say about her. Oh, she's the voice of reason. Bullshit. She's just as goddamn fascist as the rest of them. As they
Bingo.
Come, she might even be more dangerous. You know, Bingo. So I'm not buying that whole, oh, precious Ivanka. No way, because she stands back idly while her old man pulls some really brutal acts. You know what I mean? Like this. Like taking away people's health care the way they are right now. You know what I mean? It's brutal. It is absolutely brutal. And something's got to change here. Because, you know, I don't know. I just got to say that I'm very stressed out by it, man. And, you know, I'm sick of this. I mean, they're terrorizing people by this, doing this. It's over and over and over again. You know, and you know, I'm looking at, you know, the Chiron on CNN when I was flipping through the channels, and it said that it implied that they have the votes, because it said only one vote away from failure. You know what I mean?
They flip Murkowski, and I'm like you, brother John. Yeah. I mean, I feel like one of those pledges in Animal House. Thank you, sir. May I have another? Smack. And they just keep smacking me in the ass. And I just keep sitting here and I keep taking it. And I'm not doing a fucking thing about it, man. And it's frustrating. It really is, bro.
Well, I'll probably get more pissed off emails from this. But I'm gonna say that it's hard to do a lot about it. There are people, you know, what you can do is what you can do. So don't beat yourself up. You can call. You can ring the phones off the hook. You can wear them out. You can absolutely do all of that. You can email. You can talk to your neighbors. You know, that matters. As long as it doesn't get your house burned down in the middle of the night. I mean, you know, I know where you live. I'm not talking about I'm burning your house down. I'm talking about, you know, the people who... It's Georgistan, right? But the other part of it is that it's... And when I said I'll get emails, I was very sincere when I said that the Republicans will come together after this primary in Alabama and do whatever is necessary to elect the Republican. They will not sit and pick at each other's scabs. They will go about the business of maintaining their grip on power. Because remember, look at what would happen to the balance of power if that seat were actually to be won by the Democrat. Jim and I talked about this some last night. That would be a fault line level crack in the solid South. If you could actually get Doug Jones elected to the Senate. And you know, he's not, from a factual standpoint, you know, he's not just a sacrificial lamb. The guy is brilliant. He was a good United States attorney. He's got the well-being of the people at heart. But the fact of the matter is, the Democratic Party in Alabama is largely moribund. I haven't seen any noises coming out of the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, the DSCC. It was kind of encouraging to see that Joe Biden's going to go campaign for him. Jim and I last night talked about whether or not Barack Obama should get involved.
No.
Jim says no. I say yes. You take away that one seat, and it gets more and more tenuous. I'd like to shift the discussion over, though, if I could, after first mentioning that we are well over halfway through the program tonight. We've got about an hour and 13 minutes left in the program. And we remain at $200 to go to finish the week. So, you know, you would hope that getting 10 folks at 10 bucks a piece wouldn't be a Friday on the front porch miracle, but it's rapidly approaching the point where it kind of is that. So we've got $200 of fundraising to go. I'd like to shift the discussion, though, as I noted, since we're talking about health care. We all know the filthy little habit in which I engage on weekday mornings, watching Warden June sort of bicker with each other for 3 hours. Or, well, they're only live for two, and live for maybe 2.5 hours. Oh, well, whatever. Ciphering, math. But along the way, this morning, there was mention of Bernie Sanders and Amy Klobuchar on Monday evening will debate Graham and Cassidy over health care. Bernie's bill versus Graham Cassidy. And there was a uniform agreement among that panel that this was a terrible, terrible thing for Bernie to have done. And I've also seen that in the wider media landscape. I've even seen, you know, why couldn't Bernie just be quiet and let this thing die and then introduce his Medicare for All bill? And in this particular instance, why is he getting out there so that Lindsey Graham can have a forum in which to scream, to point at Bernie and scream, socialism's going to eat your mama's Bible's fetus? And so, does the group have any sort of sense of the right or wrong of this? I mean, is there any resonance that comes with that?
I'll tell you something. I think that this repeal bill is reactionary to the Medicare, you know. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm all for Medicare for All, obviously. I mean, that is the number one issue that's near and dear to me. You know, I had a mother who had MS pretty much all my life and stuff, and without Medicaid, like, I don't know what we would have done, you know, and stuff like that. So this is very near and dear to my heart. But I think that it was reactionary, and I think that, you know, there's no point in – I mean, it's good to have a discussion and do, like, maybe a tour – you know, and like basically do what he was saying and do like a campaign style thing for Medicare for All. But to actually introduce it when you don't know you don't have the votes might have caused this. Might. And I'm not blaming Bernie.
Well, to be fair, John, and I'm not simply gainsaying you, the plans for Graham Cassidy were in the works before Bernie did what he did. It takes a while to draft these things up. So it didn't just boom hit the floor of the Senate because of Bernie doing what he did. It was out there and planned pretty much as an alternative or as a way of bringing the discussion back, because, of course, they were under orders from Marcus Aurelius to do so. You know, when McCain provided the necessary no vote the last time, you know, Trump said, Don't give up. Keep going. I know you can do it. I know you can. And so this was coming back anyway. But I think your point is valid. Because what will happen Monday? What will happen Monday is based on prior conduct. You know, Lindsey recently said, Bernie's over there with his socialist bill. Graham Cassidy is your last bulwark against us getting turned into a bunch of socialists. Okay, he said that, and so Monday, Bernie will say, "Well, everybody in America deserves to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick," and Lindsey will simply respond, "You socialist tramp, you." Yes, Scott.
I got a question because I saw the little segment that you were referring to this morning on the Mr. and Mrs. Scarborough show.
Oh, good. I wasn't hallucinating.
but who did you say Bernie was going to be debating?
It'll be Graham and Cassidy, and Amy Klobuchar will be allegedly, she'll be on his side, I guess, but she didn't sign on to his bill.
Oh, okay. So it's Bernie and Amy versus Lindsey and whatever the Louisiana senator's
Bill.
Name.
I think he's Bill.
Smiling Bill Cassidy. He ought to
have
be.
You noticed that dude? Have you noticed that dude has fangs?
Well, he. I'm sure he's doing his Happy Bob smile, and by Happy Bob, I mean the animated character on the erectile dysfunction over-the-counter supplement commercials from a few years ago. I forget the product, but that's neither here nor there. For a second, I thought I misheard that Amy Klobuchar was taking a contrary position to Bernie, and I said, Lord, what is the world coming to?
No, it's just that she, to the best of my knowledge, she's still not on his bill. You know, a third of the Democratic caucus is now on the bill.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I just wanted to make sure I understood who was on whose side, because as far as my take on it, I figure it this way. Let Bernie be Bernie. I don't see the harm, personally, in him. See, the Republicans will do whatever they can not to have a rational, open, above-board discussion about what they're up to. And if Bernie, it's like cockroaches. If you can flick that light switch and get a little light on them, perhaps they'll scatter and scurry.
Well, I was certainly not taken by the, oh my God, because the thing, if I mean, you heard it, the thing that was said specifically was that Bernie was doing this out of selfishness. And the presumption being that he is certainly running for president in 2020.
Well, who isn't at this point?
Bob?
Yeah, Jim.
May I interject something real quickly?
Yeah, go.
You were talking about Dorothy Parker earlier. You know, there's a story about her when she was working for a magazine in New York, and she wasn't at work. She was at a bar, and her boss came to the bar and said, "Why aren't you at work?" And she said, I had to leave because no one was minding the pencil. Now, who is minding the light switch?
Keep going.
That will cause these cockroaches to scatter. Helter skelter, willy-nilly. I mean,
well, nobody is near. If I could jump in again, nobody is near as I can figure. The closest thing we've got to an overseer in the Senate is the Senate Majority Leader, smiling Mitch McConnell, and God knows he's not out to help anybody except himself.
Verdictum. There it is. There you have it.
And for John, if he's still on, I've got a recommendation. If you're on Facebook, rather than following the Democratic Party emails raising, you know, hair on fire issues day after day, check out socialsecurityworks.org, because I've been following them for a couple of years. And when it comes to all things Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, they're right on top of it. And I would sooner believe whatever they have to say than I would the Democratic Party. And when it comes to fundraising, they'll ask you for a couple of bucks. And I've sent a few bucks from time to time over the years. But I would much rather see my money being funneled toward their good efforts than anything that they see. I pledged last year not to give the Democratic Party a single solitary Franklin Roosevelt commie on the dime to the Democratic Party until Hillary decided that she would have a California debate with Bernie. And I don't mean to retread old ground, but since that wasn't forthcoming, neither will be my dimes.
Well, you know, speaking of dimes, look at the Secretary of Health and Human Services, who, when he was in the Congress, was also an apologist or an apostate of financial austerity. But in order to go from Washington to Pennsylvania, he has to take a private jet.
At $24,000.
Yeah. Yeah. And
24
how much
big
is,
ones.
How much is an Amtrak Fucker. Ticket from D.C. to Philly?
He could have drove for $94 round trip.
Yeah, there you go.
He's got a there government limousine. There would have been a convoy.
Yeah, but, how's that swamp draining thing working out for you guys?
Well, he apparently flies swamp class.
Yeah.
And he has abused this to the tune of $300,000 over the last 6 months. They're digging deeper in it now. And they're, of course, he's under investigation. But it'll probably go nowhere because they excuse their own. But God forbid if somebody in Barack's administration would have did this, man, they'd have been ready to hang him by his fucking nails, you know?
And you know, he is a doctor. He is a physician. And his motto is do no harm. You know how he is.
Yep.
I've seen how much harm that son of a bitch can do.
Well, dig this, I mean, that's an outrage. And you know, so too is the Steve Mnuchin stuff, him with his government jets and whatnot. Betsy DeVos, it turns out, she does not use a government jet. She uses her own and then bills the government for mileage, of course. But another thing to add into the Tom Price thing, and this is really worth paying attention to, When you say to one of these godforsaken Republicans, listen, your godforsaken health care bill eliminates coverage for pre-existing conditions. And the Republican will say, well, no, it doesn't. It merely gives that discretion to the states. It gives the discretion to the states, who are the real repository of democracy in our country. It gives the discretion to the states to ask the government for a waiver if they don't want to cover pre-existing conditions. Well, guess who says yes or no to the waiver? That's right. Tom Price.
Well, they call the states the laboratories for the creation of new and better ideas. They need to amend that. Scratch out new and better ideas, and in crayon write in the laboratory for the creation of new and better ways to fuck people up and fuck people over. Because that's, you know, if you put it in the state's hands, I mean, I'm old enough to remember the misbehavior of states of long standing. Oh, I see visions of George Corley Wallace standing in the door at the University of Alabama.
Segregation yesterday. Segregation today, and segregation forever.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. There's your states' rights. And it hasn't gotten any better with a lot of these states.
And people in the donor states are really going to get screwed, like California and New York, people that send more money to Washington than they get back. They're really going to get screwed.
Well, let's put it this way. They're going to have to revise and amend the Kama Sutra, because there will be new positions created by the GOP of ways for people to get screwed. You know,
they're really
and
good,
I'm gonna,
aren't they?
And I'll be first in line to buy a copy. Bob, I hope it's not too much of a departure, but because Jim was able to get in, I wanted to briefly touch on something that you and Jim talked about the other night.
All right.
Okay, and it'll only take about 3 minutes.
It's, you know, open floor.
Okay. The other day, I think it was Jim, you and Jim were talking about the Vietnam documentary by Ken Burns and mentioning the distinction between murder and assassination vis-a-vis John Kennedy. And looking at the old calendar here, I see that it's not only the first day of autumn, but we're precisely 2 months from the 54th anniversary of the day that President Kennedy was assassinated on the streets of Dallas. And I just wanted to pass along a couple of quick things for the fun lovers and truth seekers. The first two things are in the form of printed material, that is to say books. Two of the best books that I read on the subject are A Farewell to Justice, Jim Garrison, JFK's Assassination, and The Case That Should Have Changed History by a professor named Joan Mellon. Check that one out. A Farewell to Justice, you'll find it on Amazon. The other is a book from a couple of years before that, Destiny Betrayed, JFK, Cuba, and the Garrison Case by Jim DiEugenio. Those are two of the best books on the subject that you can find. Now, if you're not inclined to read, I've got two movies that are of equal benefit. One is not really a movie. It's on YouTube. It's called 50 Reasons for 50 Years. If you Google that, 50 Reasons for 50 Years JFK on YouTube, you can spend almost endless hours watching 50 little short segments, each highlighting an aspect of the JFK case that either the Warren Commission lied about or most people don't know, or both. Okay? And that's free. And then for a little slightly more than free, like $1.99 on Amazon, you can watch John Barber's latest documentary, The American Media and the Second Assassination of John F. Kennedy. That's on Amazon. I recommend any and all of those bits of information to anyone seriously interested in the JFK assassination case, because I think you and Jim would agree that nothing has been right since that awful day in Dallas. That was the beginning of the snowball, you know, easing down the hill, gaining size, gaining momentum, and then speeding up and brought us such things as Vietnam and Watergate. God, Ronald Reagan, George W. Bush, George H. W. Bush, et cetera, et al.
Well,
I was a 9-year-old kid when it happened, and I followed the case studiously over the years, and I know the impact that that day had on me and has had on our country in the meantime, and nothing literally has ever been the same since that man was shot dead in the streets of Dallas. So that's my little infomercial.
Well, and along the way you referenced, of course, the documentary, and you know, I got into the third installment, The River Styx, last night.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, wait till the fourth. You're gonna love the fourth.
Oh well, I mean, you know, I know how it ends.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when they made that big movie out of the book Gettysburg, you know. I knew how it ended.
Yeah.
But more and more, as I progress through this thing, I'm becoming more and more disturbed. I didn't begin watching it seeking to be disturbed.
No.
But the fact that, one, David H. Koch gets big, great big, all capital letters, single screen billing in this thing raises all kinds of hackles for me. I mean, I know it was expensive to produce, and I know that Ken Burns has a lifestyle to maintain. I get that. and he's got you know, he's got a staff and he's got equipment to maintain. I get all that. But David Koch is such a polarizing figure in this country that to include him, and not just include him, but give him single screen, big bold letters, all caps billing on it as a supporter, can't help but tell you where this thing is coming from. And so lo and behold, I'm watching the River Styx, and son of a bitch, who shows up? Who's on the screen? John Negroponte. That's right. One of the biggest unindicted war criminals of the last part of the 20th century and the early part of the 21st. I mean, in a civilized world, mothers would cross their streets with their children in front of him and then spit on their ground and make the sign of the evil eye at him. Okay?
Yeah.
He's a goddamn war criminal, pure and simple. He should be standing in the dock in The Hague for everything from his dirty business in Central America to the dirty business in the Middle East. Plain and simple.
I definitely get what you're saying about Koch's participation in funding this thing, but I'm holding off comment really until all 10 episodes have played out. And yeah, that disturbed me as well, as did the thing you mentioned the other night about, was it a murder, you know, or was it an assassination? Was
well,
it an
and again,
of an election?
And even more morally disturbing than that, those references to Kennedy is, like I said, the reference to My Lai as killings and not murders.
Yeah.
We'll come back to this just in a second, but Steve wants to jump in and engage with you for a minute. Scott, go ahead.
Okay.
Hey, Scott, this one will take about 30 seconds. I heard you mention Herb Jepko and the Nightcaps, and I thought I was the only one on the planet that even remembered that show.
I sent
you a link to their theme song.
I saw that link. I didn't see it the day you sent it, and I was going to acknowledge it tonight because I used to love Jepko.
As corny as
that show was. Now, what was the name of the retired professional wrestler that he used to have on there with him?
I don't remember. That was back when I was probably 15, 16 years old, but I can remember listening to that show all night. It was like Art Bell without Art Bell. But yeah. He wouldn't let people talk politics or any weirdness or abortion or religion. But yeah. What a great show. What a great show. But that's all. I don't want to consume too much time because it's so totally off topic. But if you Google it, there's still links out there where you can listen to old broadcasts. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's the Nightcaps, NITECAPS. Check it out.
Yep, that's all. All right, back to you guys.
Okay, well, I do want to turn back to it because I just had a note from Ron in the soon-to-be-frozen North, not that he'll know about it because he's headed to the sandbox. He said, regarding Ken Burns and the Koch brothers, don't get me started. 4 tours over there under my belt, and I don't need anyone telling me what happened and how I should feel. I feel angry. My bottom line is that more than 55,000 of my young generally brothers and a few sisters died for no good reason, another 500,000 sustained often disabling wounds, and probably another 2 million sustained and continue to sustain and battle various forms of PTSD. Again, for no good reason. Not a single fucking yardstick was moved. And you'll get no pushback from me on that. What struck me as I watched last night is that and it all just sort of swarmed on me in an instant. You know, Ken Burns' claim to fame. Ken Burns rose to prominence with the Civil War documentary, which absolutely captivated the entire country, we're told. And while he showed the Matthew Brady blurry black and white photos of dead bodies laying on the ground and stuff, he also, you know, he used the slow, sad fiddle and the tinkling whorehouse piano soundtrack to remind us of what a terribly, terribly, terribly sad and yet awfully romantic affair it was. And it's interesting that you can go back and in the aftermath of Ken Burns' documentary, you see a cultural uptick in interest in and rise of these Sons of Confederate veterans, heritage not hate, flag flying dickheads. And it just landed on me last night that what Ken Burns is doing with this documentary is he's creating 150 years, well, not really, more like 110 years later, he's doing what the South did with the Civil War. He's creating the impression that it was a lost cause. When the bottom line is we never had a goddamn dime's worth of business over there in the first place.
Well, get your head around this if you can. And I mentioned words to the following effect to you in an email the other day. All right, let's look back at just who was responsible for this fiasco. You had, as David Halberstam called them, the best and the brightest. You had old Bob McNamara, you had Dean Rusk, and you had a lot of Kennedy's cabinet and advisors and people stayed on after LBJ became president, okay? Now, if the so-called best and brightest can lead us in to the gigantic clusterfuck that Vietnam was, what should we be expecting with the not best and certainly not brightest who have their grubby little hands on the levers of power today? And you mentioned it the other night, Bob, 30 years from now, there'll be some new Ken Burns person or a Ken Burns clone who will do a documentary about Afghanistan and Iraq and what's left of this country 30 years from now at the hands of our orange friend.
Yeah, and it'll probably have a sad fiddle in the background and a tinkling whorehouse piano.
Well, it probably will. It probably will.
But she could shake down.
But, I mean, that dawned on me as I'm, I guess, five episodes in. Okay, because I've been watching it nightly. And each night I keep telling myself that just stay calm. You bought the ticket, now take the ride, as old Hunter Thompson used to say. But it's like, and I'm learning stuff. I mean, I'm fairly conversant on the matter of Vietnam. I wasn't there. I was here as a youngster in the streets. Hell, my 14th birthday, I was with some grown-ups at the Pentagon protesting. They poured blood all over the place and they got arrested, and I guess the marshal or whoever it was took pity on 14-year-old me and let me go, you know. And hell, I mean, the two big marches in 69 in October and November, the big moratorium marches, I was right there on Pennsylvania Avenue, and we even flipped off J. Edgar Hoover as we passed the FBI building, because that old queen was scowling down at us, you know, thinking dark thoughts. And somebody saw him up there in the window and said, hey, let's flip him off. So, you know, a quarter million of my fellow Americans did their duty and flipped that old bastard, the bird, as we marched merrily by, you know?
May I ask a question real quickly?
Of me?
Yeah.
Oh.
How was Hoover dressed?
you mentioned that
oh, that was
well
great.
I'll tell you, because I saw him. It was a beautiful Parisian import, a gold LeMay number just off the shoulder, and he had a come hither look on his otherwise bulldog scowling face.
Okay, so this is really this is
give him a cowbell, Bob. That's that question was Cal Bellworthy.
Absolutely. So so let me just
I got to
share this because I saw it. Was it Bill Maher, I think, maybe, had Tim Gunn, and you know, he's a fashion consultant, Project Runway, all of that.
Last week.
He's really engaging to listen to. And did you see this clip, Scott?
Yeah, I did.
Apparently Tim Gunn's father was an FBI agent and was, you know, right-hand man-ish relative to J. Edgar Hoover.
Right-hand manly.
Yes. And Tim Gunn told this story deadpan serious. He wasn't clowning around. He wasn't having fun. He recounted this story as absolutely factually correct. And he talked about how, and he's 10 years older than me. So he talked about how when he was a little kid, that he, like so many other people in this country, absolutely adored Lucy, you know, Lucille Ball. You know, from I Love Lucy with Vivian Vance as Ethel Mertz to the next incarnation, and Vivian Vance was in that as well. And he said that he was with his dad at FBI headquarters one day in the 60s when his dad asked him, "Tim, would you like to meet Vivian Vance?" And he was just thrilled. Oh, yes, of course. And so he's ushered into J. Edgar Hoover's office, and there stands Vivian Vance. "Hi, how are you? Pleased to meet you, blah, blah, blah." And he said, "It took me years to finally realize, wait a minute, why wasn't J. Edgar Hoover in J. Edgar Hoover's office with Vivian Vance?" And so then he was curious enough about it that they went back through the visitor logs. And there was never, ever, 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 ever a moment when Vivian Vance visited the headquarters of the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Well, there you go. It's that old Clark Kent Superman thing.
And I just sat there, just mouth hanging open, catching flies. Because it's, you know, the idea that you're going to, send the kid in.
Have you seen any Gladiator movies, Timmy?
Exactly.
Have you been in a Turkish prison?
Right. So, you know. But the it was an interesting enough story that I immediately had to open a browser and type in Vivian Vance and just started looking at photographs going, "I'll be damned, maybe, you know, I guess."
Well, I mean, you talk about brushing elbows with the powerful back in that era. Cartha Deke DeLoach was like the third or fourth guy in charge at the FBI. He was pals with my usher. He was an usher and pals with my uncle at the little Catholic church that we used to go to back in the 60s. Have I ever told you the story of how I ended up at Betty Ford's house?
No.
All right, let me do that very quickly.
Is there a parrot involved?
Oh, no, please do, Bob, please.
My first 2 years of high school in good old Alexandria, Virginia, I went to a Catholic boys' high school called Bishop Ireton High School, 9th and 10th grade I went, and proceeded to flunk out in pretty rapid order. I used to play the trumpet, and I was stayed late for a trumpet lesson with a guy, Mr. Adrian, I forget his last name, who was in the Army band, was my private trumpet instructor. So it's after dark. I'm walking home. It's about a mile and a half hike from the school to my house. Meanwhile, a vehicle pulls up next to me, and half a dozen kids from another high school come out and begin to threaten me. Okay? So I ran like hell to the first house that I could find, knocked on the door, And this nice woman opened the door. I get the martini in her hand should have tipped me off, okay? But a nice woman answered the door. I explained what happened. She said, come in, stand in the hallway here. I'll call the police, and they'll see what they can do. So I'm standing there, and to the right in the hallway was a room that looked to be like a den. There were a lot of books on the wall, you know, on shelves on the wall, and a desk and a couple of chairs. And I'm kind of waiting around while she's calling the Alexandria Police Department. And I notice that on one of the shelves is the main volume plus all 26 volumes of evidence of the Warren Commission report. And it didn't dawn on me right away. I looked at the open door, and hanging on a hook on the open door was a dry cleaning bag with a couple of suits in it and the name Ford on the label. And I said, holy shit, I'm standing in Gerald Ford's house, who was a congressman at the time. But, I mean, how... it's like brushes with... I mean, and Jerry Ford, of course, was on the Warren Commission. He actually was the FBI's man on the Warren Commission. Because Deke DeLoach used to confer with Jerry Ford on a regular basis to find out what the Warren Commission was talking about. But
hey,
anyway,
Scott,
that's... Yeah, go ahead.
Got a quick question for you. While you were there, did Ford, like, trip over the threshold?
No, he was still over in D.C. It was okay. In the late afternoon, and the police finally came, and Mrs. Ford explained what was going on, and they gave me a ride home. But it was just... It's just one of those things that you never in a million years think is going to happen.
Yeah, that's really wild. Well, hey, guys, I got to go. My date is here early, so I'll give you a concert report next week, okay?
Absolutely. Have fun, Rick.
All right. You all take care. Rock on.
Bye now.
Uh-huh, bye.
And
but anyway, just to sum up what I was saying earlier about the two books and the two pieces of video, anybody who is curious about the nature of that JFK assassination case could not go wrong to read either of those books or look at either of those videos. And, you know, I will never stop learning all I can about it because so much changed in the wake of it.
Well, let's fast forward to the present for just a minute, if it's okay.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Bob, do you really think Bernie's going to do this thing Monday? And do you think it will have... well, of course it'll have a negative effect because it gives them powder to do comparative contrast. And it could be the straw that breaks the camel's back. And question number two, I think they're going to get this thing through. And I was wondering your thoughts on that.
Can I weigh in on that?
Sure.
Yeah, we haven't heard from Steve in New York.
Yeah. You know, not to put too fine a point on it, but you know what I'm really sick of? I'm really sick of people on the left, first of all, hiding behind our beliefs, and two, letting the right consistently define the terms of the argument. And I'll tell you what I mean by that.
Please.
You know what? We need to start being bold about what we think. We need to start being bold with our message. And if we're constantly only reacting to what they do and respond to what they do, we're always going to lose.
But the timing's all wrong.
I don't,
you know,
there's no such thing as bad timing here.
Just it's wait only, a week.
It's
wait
only,
a week.
I don't agree. It's only bad. It's only bad timing if you fuck up the message. As I remember it, the way Bernie introduced this, and for which nearly a third of the Democratic caucus signed on, was Medicare for all. Now, if you start hearing, you know, Little Miss Lindsay, et cetera, start talking about socialize this and socialize that, then you fight back and you say, God damn it, this is not socialized medicine. This is Medicare for all. And if it's good enough for your grandma, it's good enough for you. And then you define the terms of the argument and you say, here's the bottom line. We want you to have the same health care your grandma does or better, and they don't want you to have any.
Right. So and where was that gutsy senator when Lindsay was, you know, crawled out from under the fainting couch and said, well, if you want to be socialist, well, there's Bernie for you, and we'll all be socialists. Yeah, where was the person who said, God damn it, Lindsay, sit the fuck down. If Medicare for all is socialism and socialized medicine, then so too is Medicare. And if that's the case and you hate socialism, then stand here in front of the American people and tell American senior citizens that you want to get rid of their Medicare, Lindsay. Do it.
Bingo. Bingo. Go on the offense. Go on the offense.
Well, it appears we're at a consensus here, then.
I understand what you're saying, Steve, and I understand what you're saying, Steve, and wow, that wasn't helpful. But
you know, sick of hiding.
But Bernie,
I'm
Bernie,
sick of hiding
Bernie,
and
Bernie also introduced his bill with the caveat that he said this isn't going to pass. It can't pass.
There's too much at stake. It can wait a week.
But
let's just squash this thing and go to regular order.
Well, that's well. Hold on a minute, Steve. Again, not helpful.
I love my namesake, Steve. He knows I don't mean nothing.
Here's the thing:
for clarity, the gentleman from New York, the gentleman from Georgia. That will be the best way to distinguish.
Okay. At which point we have to I have to make a general recommendation, since we're going to refer to the gentleman from New York and the gentleman from Georgia, a little light homework, and it's damned well entertaining. When we're done here, everybody go and look online and read Mark Twain's Cannibalism in the Cars. Just trust me.
Okay. And I won't ever ask for. To be able to revise and extend my remarks, just so you know.
Exactly. But
the gentleman is out of order, which reminds me, the plumbing's out of order. Make a note of that.
And of course, we revise and extend every Friday, so you know, there's that. But here's the point. Steve, the gentleman from Georgia, argues that we should have waited a week until after September 30th and then introduced this. That's only true. And that is applicable if you are willing to assume good faith on the part of the Republicans and that, you know, if this thing fails, it's over and they're done. But as was pointed out at the beginning of the program, when the second session of this Congress convenes in January, they're right back there at budget reconciliation again. Okay.
Yeah, good point. And it's right back to thank you, sir. May I have another?
And so, you know, they're not gonna be bothered by the niceties of rules. Just one more thing. Apart from the fact that we got 31 minutes left in the program and we're still at zero, and so that means we'll finish the week behind and not ahead. But anyway. The other part of this that comes along that drives me batshit is the statement that came next this morning. And Bernie wants Medicare for all, and we all know that Medicare is going bankrupt. Well, sunshine, it doesn't have to. Maybe we could take a little itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny, tiny little bit of money out of the bloated goddamn Pentagon budget and put it over toward the well-being of the American people. Because after all, if Kim Jong Bad Haircut decides to light us up, we're not going to need the health care or the military either.
Well said, Bob.
Or just raise the limit. Right now, I think it's $118,000 of income are subject to the FICA deductions, bump up that limit.
Forget about the limit. Get rid of the limit. Here's what Democrats don't think.
In an ideal world. Yeah.
But here's what you do. You say we're going to get rid of the limit, and then we're going to cut. We're going to cut everyone's rate across the board. Why can't you play their game? Beat them at their game. Stop playing. You know, one of the rules, one of Sun Tzu's rules on the art of war is when you're playing on your when you play on your enemy's territory, you lose every time. Stop playing their game.
Which is also
this is a perfect.
That's
this
one
is
of the,
perfect.
That's,
sorry,
that's no. That's one of those lessons that comes out of the Ken Burns documentary. While we're at it, you know, we were over there. We didn't know the terrain. We didn't know the geography. We were fighting, and I looked at Agnes as we were watching, and I went, "Well, Jesus Christ, it's straight out of Sun Tzu."
And Sun Tzu, and regarding it, that, Sun Tzu also said, "There's nothing wrong with not fighting." So in that case, we shouldn't have fought. But when it comes, I think this was a perfect time put forth let me step back here. Let's just suppose we hadn't put forth a Medicare for all bill. Then we're in a position where people say, okay, and the Democrats are out there saying don't pass Graham Cassidy, and it leaves us open to the to people saying, well, what's your alternative? Now here's what we have. We have this is our alternative. And if they come back with, well, you know, socialism, yada, 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 and you say, no, it's Medicare for all. And then the next question you ask the questioner, the next question you ask some chimpanzee or some fuckwad senator, do you want your grandma? Okay, how about this? Would you like your grandma or your mother to lose her health care? Because that's what will happen with Graham Cassidy. There is so much here. It's so much it's so much better that he introduced this, but we got to learn to play the game our way. Hardball. Bob and I have talked about this a million times. Hardball. Stop bringing a butter knife to a knife fight. Hardball. Okay, fine. You want to try to gut this fish? This fish is going to fight back and not only gut you but gut your children. And I'm sorry, but I'm sick of fucking playing softball and watching them win all the time with these goofballs that they putting in office. We got to stop thinking that, well, people will never vote for Trump. Guess what?
They did.
People will never vote for Reagan. Oh, what a, they'll never vote for a B actor. Oh, are you kidding me?
May I interject?
We have to stop doing that.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, go, Jim.
Sorry about my yelling, folks.
No, that's okay.
I agree with that caller, you know, absolutely. But, you know, here's a quotation from Scott Fitzgerald. Take it for what it's worth. At the age of 18, our beliefs are the mountaintops from which we speak. At the age of 81, they are the caves in which we hide.
Well, if I understand you correctly, I think there's truth in that. And you've got a bunch of old millionaires hiding in caves in the United States Senate and the House of Representatives.
Well, I think you've got a people who are just not a bunch of old millionaires. There are a lot of people who are just letting these people take advantage of them because of their age. And, you know,
and it's worth remembering whose portrait, photograph, signed Trump has on the wall in the Oval Office.
Oh, God, is it Andrew Jackson?
Andrew Jackson.
No, there's another one. At least he had it on the wall at Trump Tower in his office. And that's his modern-day hero, Richard Milhouse Nixon.
Oh, my Lord.
And we haven't gotten to the Nixon segments of Ken Burns' documentary. But I think one of the points that he will ultimately be going after is the current state of things politically in this country has its ancestry in the shouted conversation that took place 40 plus years ago during the left versus right approach to Vietnam. That argument was never settled. It was never finished, much less settled. And remember Trump was the protege of Roy Cohn.
Oh,
another nasty bastard from the past.
May I interrupt here just for a second? Have any of you ever read the book by Nicholas von Hoffman, Citizen Kane.
No, I saw the movie, but I didn't read the book.
James Woods. Oh, my Lord. Roy Cohn, talk about an apostate of hell.
Another good cinematic depiction of him was in the series Angels in America.
That I've never seen.
Oh, you definitely need to see that, because Roy Cohn figures prominently in that story.
Al Pacino.
As he lied dying of whatever he was dying from.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I remember him saying in that movie, it was something, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Scott, it was something along the lines of, I am not a homosexual man. I am a man who happens to have sex with other men.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. isn't that the very definition of a distinction without a difference?
Yeah. Oh, he was what a wretched individual. Just wretched.
Oh God.
Wretched.
And bearing and let's do remember, since we're taking a stroll down history's primrose path, let's remember how Donald J. Trump came to know Roy Cohn.
Thank you, Bob.
It was when Donald J. Trump got busted for racist landlord-tenant practices in his properties in New York. Now, the federal government agency charged with enforcing the Fair Housing Act was ready to settle with it. And it wouldn't have even hurt. Just promise not to do it anymore and we go away. But that's not good enough. So Trump goes out and hires Roy Cohn to bulldog it, and still winds up getting his ass beat, and winds up losing money in the process. When all he had to do is say, "I promise never to discriminate against people of color again in my rental practices." That's all he had to do.
And to have done that, Bob, would have been the violation of Roy Cohn's first operating principle, which was don't complain. And don't explain, and don't apologize. I mean, that's where Trump got his tutelage.
Well, let me just couch my argument by saying, when you're going to attack or counterattack, timing is everything. And I'm just going to leave it at that, and we'll see how this plays out.
Well, I mean,
I have a comment.
Oh, go ahead, Roger.
I have a comment about tactics here. And what it is that as long as you have a party or group that's willing to stoop to impossibly underhanded things, deeds to get their way, when the other side is really more altruistic and trying to do something good for humanity, for others, it's very difficult to parse a way to not wind up having to engage in the same tactics and lower yourself similarly. I'm afraid that criminals will win if they're shooting with guns, and I don't see how fighting those tactics with equal criminality is going to get us forward.
I'll weigh in on that. And again, this is something Bob and I have talked about. I can tell you, for me, I'm pretty close to an ends justifies the means type of person. I'm sorry, but I am. Because I see the difference between politics and policy.
I agree.
You don't get to put any policy you don't get to enact policy until you master politics. And if it takes cutting them while they bleed to beat them in order to get in to do the right thing, so be it. That's what we have to do. I'm not saying I like the game, and I'm not saying once we get into power, if we get into power, we don't change the rules once we're there. And I sound a little bit like Hillary here. But I think I've probably learned something from thinking about that and Bob. But you got to get into power, and you have, you know, it's like, if you play a game and you don't like the rules, but you're not in a position to change the rules, you got to play the game the way the rules are written. And that's right now the way the rules are written.
Yeah, and it's not a matter of the Democrats lowering themselves. Hell, it's a matter of playing the game intelligently.
Do you want power or do you not want power?
Yeah, it's that simple. I mean, it's that simple.
Do you remember, some of you are old enough to remember the 1964 election between Johnson and Goldwater, and the tagline on the LBJ spots was "Vote on November 3rd. The stakes are too high to stay home." Well, we're in that case right now. The stakes are too high with the health care, with 1/6 of the fucking economy of this good old USA. The stakes are too high to fiddle fart around and not play to win. And if that requires maybe, not being unethical, but lowering yourself, so-called, to tactically and in terms of working out your battle plan, because it is a battle. It is, back to Vietnam. It's a battle for the hearts and minds of people who are going to be affected by what these fuckwads are trying to do. And I'm one of them, Jesus.
If you're fighting people, though, that are willing to engage in criminal, let alone unethical tactics, I'm afraid you wind up getting up with worse than fleas if you're going to match them. I don't think we can do that.
Well, I get that, Roger, but let's look where we are briefly here. We are saddled with Trump and to an extent the GOP in control of the House and Senate because of a mindset of bombast, bullshit, and bluster. Okay, now to me it's a simple matter of figuring out what are the operatives, the opposite operatives of bluster, bluster, bombast, and bullshit. Those three things have an opposite. Whatever that opposite is, the Democrats need to latch onto it and just flog it until people get sick of hearing it. And bring back the goddamn political commercial of Granny getting pushed off the cliff in her wheelchair.
Oh, but that was unsporting. That was ungentlemanly.
Well, we're not. This is not the Marquess of Queensbury that we're dealing with.
No. Here. But as Democrats, as liberals or progressives, we have to play by the Marquess of Queensbury rules, while the other side is a bunch of stump liquor crazed. Monstrosities who
and
will kidney
don't.
Punch you below the belt, poke you in the eye, pull your hair, knock you to the ground, and stomp your guts out. And then when you're down there, they'll tell you, no, go ahead, get back up. No, it's okay. We're all and then they'll do it again.
Which is what they're doing now. And, well, you know what's crazy, though, is John McCain, Lisa Murkowski, and Susan Collins, after they voted no this last time around, they went home and was welcomed by a crowd of people that were, praising them for what they did, thanking them. And Lisa Murkowski told her staff that was one of her proudest moments. And now she's going to strip that away. I didn't see any official reports that she officially said she's going to vote yes. Am I wrong on that?
It's on page 95, bro. I mean, just Google it. Or Bob says it's page 85. And that's why, because they're giving her an exemption, and she's only looking out for her own state.
Hold on. Did she actually say that is a yes?
No.
Is she
no.
Official? Okay. It's unconstitutional. And you know, here's the thing: it doesn't matter if it's unconstitutional because this goddamn Roberts Court is going to uphold it.
Let's get it straight, gang,
time out for just a second, okay? I just queued it up. I want to check in on the Klan rally. I mean, Strange rally down in Alabama. Interestingly, there are reports that Breitbart was refused press credentials to cover it. So I've got him here.
Somebody disrespects our flag. To say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now. Out. He's fired. He's fired!
I think that was a Colin Kaepernick dig. When somebody disrespects our flag, get that son of a bitch off the field, he's fired.
USA, 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 USA. Oh, God, there you know, is that mantra.
Some owner's going to do that. He's going to say, that guy that disrespects our flag, he's fired. And that owner, they don't know it. They don't know it. They're friends of mine, many of them. They don't know it. They'll be the most popular person for a week. They'll be the most popular person in this country because that's a total disrespect of our heritage. That's a total disrespect of everything that we stand for, okay? Everything that we stand for.
Hey, Don, sing the second verse of the national anthem.
We have freedoms, and we have freedom of choice and many, many different freedoms. But you know what? It's still totally disrespectful. And, you know, when the NFL ratings are down massively.
Jesus again with the ratings.
Massively. The NFL ratings are down massively. Now, the number one reason happens to be that they like watching what's happening on, you know, with yours truly.
Wait. Really? They like. That stupid son of a bitch just said NFL ratings are down because everybody's watching him. He really did just say that, didn't he? Holy shit. Oh, my God. And, of course, he's in Alabama, so naturally he goes down there and waves the racism bloody shirt, and the crowd goes wild.
I would start going to church again, Bob. Twice on Sundays even, and Wednesday night prayer meeting, if that son of a bitch would slip and amend his previous remark by saying somebody needs to take this no good son of a bitch N-word off the field. Just drop his mask for as long as it takes to utter the N-word and then watch things shift a little bit. But it ain't going to happen.
Well, you know what's interesting? You know why NFL ratings are down, if they are indeed down? Because as a result of the Colin Kaepernick controversy, there is, I mean, I've seen the hashtag on social media, boycott NFL. And it has nothing to do with being opposed to Colin Kaepernick or to people who kneel during the national anthem, but to being opposed to those people who oppress people who protest. Just saying. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to just, you know, drop a turd in the punch bowl by bringing him on live. But I mean, just to let you know, he's turning around. He's doing the nodding the head Mussolini thing. He's making the strong man with his fists, you know, the Charles Atlas pose.
Bob, who is this person? I'm sorry, I lost something.
Donald Trump.
Oh.
In Alabama.
I'm sorry. I was trying to feed Rufus, and he was like, you know, making noises. That's what Trump was saying to these people?
Yeah. Yeah. Here, let's see.
Enforcement.
No. You don't have to. That's okay.
We protect our citizens, uphold our traditions, and we will always defend our borders.
Come on,
these
assholes.
These are Alabama values. I understand the people of Alabama.
Stupid bastard. He couldn't find Zip City with a... Oh, never mind.
No, he couldn't. And, you know, what he wants to talk about, protecting citizens and things of that nature and being kind to people and being decent to people, which he never has, that goddamn wall that he's proposing to build or trying to build, how much is that going to cost? How many billions?
Oh, well, they're just, let's put it this way. They're putting the price tag at Puerto Rico after in the aftermath of Maria, somewhere around $49 billion of dollars.
Okay.
You know, Puerto Rico will have to go begging anyway, because Puerto Rico really has no. I mean, talk about no representation.
No, they don't.
And he wants to fritter billions away on his stupid wall.
The most ridiculous, militarily infallible, or infallible in his own mind, but fallible in anybody who has any type of realization as to how stupid the whole goddamn thing is. As you said last night, we are lucky to have Mexico for our neighbor. We could have much worse.
Yeah.
I forgot about the Alabama rally tonight, so I did not take the time to print out my Trump speak bingo card. So I'll have to print that out, you know, and get my little marker, my little dauber, and then watch the replay on C-SPAN and see how quickly I can get bingo with all of his stupid ass talking points.
Well, don't do it. Don't make it martini bingo. Okay, if you have to drink every time, you won't make it. You won't make it to midnight Pacific. Okay.
Well, the fumes coming off this bingo dauber are enough to give you a buzz. They're not quite airplane blue, but they're close.
Oh boy! By the way, Rufus sends greetings to his feathered friend.
And well, remember, there's a furry friend there that hangs out with Punky, too. We just never
hear. Yeah, Chirps the cat. Yes, Chocolate Chirps. She's
there
a sweetie. Well, Punky is inordinately quiet tonight, and I'm glad for that, because earlier in the week, he was just shrieking his birdie guts out for no apparent reason that I could discern.
He can't break
the sound barrier.
He's in Huntsville. he's covering the strange rally for Chirp and Tweet.
Well, Bob, he's got his strange, doesn't he?
He's got
some real strange.
We've got a short amount of time left, and again, I'm going to mention that we're well on the way to a Friday night, not a Friday night miracle, but a Friday night goose egg, which will mean a fundraising goal of $400 as we head toward the end of the month on Monday, which will be too much challenge. But I want to go back to the Bernie thing, and I want to ask a question. And look, anybody familiar with this program knows that I was four square and full-throated in my support of Bernie during the primary. And you know, not real happy with, but, you know, went and did what I was supposed to do in November. I did not fail the one question quadrennial IQ test. But I've got a question, and maybe it's going to be perceived as ageist, but so be it. Are we prepared to vote for, because, you know, maybe, you know, last time it was still Hillary's turn. Well, okay, maybe 20 is Bernie's turn. Are we prepared to vote for a 79-year-old nominee for president?
I don't think so.
Steve's?
I am. Well, go ahead, Steve's, and then I'll tell you what I say.
No, I would, but he's going to be perceived as a socialist, and that's a dirty word. I mean,
and a doddering old man by any mistake he might make.
Other Steve, what do you think?
In the primary, or if he's the nominee in the general?
I mean, if he's the nominee in the general, I'm voting for him.
Oh, absolutely.
But, you know, because that's what you do if you really, you know, understand the binary game. But that's a different conversation to get me more hateful emails.
Right. Fall in line. Right.
But,
I get all that
but
shit.
Does, you know... We've had no problems over the years commenting on the problems that arose, you know, not just because of Reagan's policies and philosophies, but because of his age.
Well, I don't think it was so much his age, but the fact that he had Alzheimer's. That was the issue.
Well,
big time.
Bob, let me tell you where I come down on Bernie in 2020. I would gladly vote for him in the primary and in the general, and I would hope that he would have a better than average running mate, which I'm sure he will, okay? But I guess it was in March of 16 when he came to San Diego, and I stood outside the convention center in line for every minute of at least 3.5 to 4 hours, okay? And I was tired just from standing in line waiting to get in. And when we got in, by the time we got in, and we were nowhere near the tail end of the line, we were in the overflow room. The main room was packed and jammed, and the fire marshal wouldn't let another soul in. And I think it was Bernie's second or third event that day in a busy week.
No doubt he's hale. There's no doubt he's hearty.
Now, if he can stay in as good shape or close to it, but, you know, how old will he be in 2020?
79. He would be the oldest general election candidate, I think, in American history.
Well, if he's up to it and up for it and can show the people that, I wouldn't have any problem at all voting for him.
Well, I wouldn't either. I'll retract my former statement. I wouldn't either.
And, of course, behind this is the presumption being made by the for-profit media that because he introduced this legislation, he's running in 2020 and he only did it for himself. And I object to that. Because the job of a senator is to introduce legislation. Because the way you introduce an idea into the body politic of this country is by introducing the legislation that supports the idea. And to that end, I don't push back on the idea. I mean, John Conyers, frankly, over in the House, has introduced Medicare for All every year for 20 years.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And we weren't having that conversation about John Conyers.
Well, I voted for Bernie in the primary, and I would definitely vote for him in a general if he could advance that far. Absolutely.
And I would too. I would too. Like I say, I was wrong when I said.
So I just wanted to put that out there for consideration, because
I just hope I'm alive enough to be able to do it.
So that'll just add one more adjective to, you know, as Trump runs for re-election, he'll go from being socialist Bernie to, or crazy Bernie to crazy old socialist Bernie.
Well, Bob, how old will Trump be? 76?
He's 72 now?
76, he'll be 76 in 20.
No, he'll be 74, I guess.
No,
73 or 74. He's
okay. Okay.
Yeah. He raved on and on about Hillary not being healthy enough to be president. Yeah, this is a guy who hangs on to the Prime Minister of England to keep from falling down. Oh, and by the way, just one thing to watch over the weekend. The German elections are rolling around. And this could be a telling moment, because on the ballot is that bunch that I was educated about while I was there in 2012, the AfD, Alternative für Deutschland, which is the German Nazi party in everything but name. Nationalist,
yes, sir.
Racist, the works.
And you saw them, did you not, when you were there?
Oh, yeah. And I saw their little stickers that said, things that said, good guests leave. And they've got posters mm-hmm. around Germany showing, and it says, bikinis, not burkas. Mm-hmm. And there's a good chance that the AfD will pick up seats in the Bundestag, is that the German parliament? Angela Merkel will likely remain chancellor, but seeing the ideological great-grandchildren of the Nazi Party get seats in the German parliament is more than a little bit disturbing.
You know, that prediction was made even by Nazis themselves who were about to be hanged, like Gary. He said 100 years from now, they'll be erecting statues of me.
And
what he said.
Well, and you know what? It's, you know, fascism never quits. There's always going to be an opportunity to prey upon the ignorance and the hatreds of human beings.
You know, it's just like Dracula. No matter how many ways they kill him, he always manages a way to come back in those movies, you know?
Yeah, right. Last July, there were 6,000 supporters of AFD who went to a little town called Themar for what was billed Rechtsrock, Right Rock, Rock Against Foreign Infiltration.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, guess what happened at Rechtsrock? The little bastards couldn't resist. They got themselves a belly full of the finest beer on earth, and they started Sieg Heiling.
You know, that doesn't surprise me at all. It simply doesn't. I mean, there are so many people who will want to pretend that Hitler is gone, will never come back, and nor will his ideas and his programs. But they are wrong. You cannot ignore that son of a bitch. You cannot ignore what he did, and you cannot be forbidden to speak his name, because if you do, people will say, oh, no, no, no. But it can happen again.
Sounds like Voldemort.
Yeah, well, there you go, saying the name. All right, we got to get out of here. I got to go pick up Ferg after work. But I want to thank everybody for joining in the conversation this evening. God, I hope I'm not getting what Ferg and Agnes have. I feel a little gravelly here. I'll be back Monday. I'll miss you over the weekend. I'm sure we'll be interacting, perhaps over on Facebook, whatever. As James pointed out by email a little bit ago, you can always revise and extend your remarks on the Horns Facebook page, or on mine for that matter. So you're welcome to. Looks like, depending on what happens with the overnight crew, and frankly, it won't be a whole bunch because this is the tail end of the month when things fall off dramatically. It will have somewhere a little less than $400 to raise come Monday. Or maybe not. Who knows? Maybe we'll catch up with what happened this evening somewhere along the way. If you would like to, I encourage people to, you know, go to the Patreon page if you don't like Facebook, or if you don't like PayPal, or go to the PayPal interface if you don't mind PayPal. You know, think about becoming a subscriber. You know, just $10 a month, 16 cents or less per hour of programming for live progressive conversation that happens 3 hours a night or afternoon or morning, wherever you are on the planet. 5 times a week. I'm biased, but I can't imagine much better bargain than that. Thanks to everybody. Thanks to Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable this evening. We had some great conversation. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff in the chat room. Thank you to Sparky and Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox, Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal, COAL, River, RIVER, MTN on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. Have a wonderful weekend.